I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
And welcome back to Sharing the Silver Screen with me, Spider-Dan, and Angry Andy Reviews. Once again, sharing films with each other. Andy goes for the well-known Oscar-winning champion of all the box office glory, like Gladiator. And I bring films like Frankenhooker, which we'll be looking at today. Frank Henenlotter, the weird master of exploitation cinema of the late mid to late 80s, early 80s to the late 90s. A lot of weird stuff he's done. Famously Basket Case and Brain Damage. But we'll be looking at Frankenhooker today. And my feeling was behind this. A lot of people were joking, saying Poor Things was a remake, jokingly said it was a remake of Frankenhooker. And I was like, I really enjoyed Frankenhooker. Why don't we revisit that? And since I chose that, Emma Stone has gone and won the Oscar for her performance in Poor Things. I've now seen Poor Things. I am a fan. It's a controversial film. There's a lot of thoughts and feelings about it. I don't really want to talk about that anyway. You know, there's things it explores good, well, good, poor, badly, whatever. That's your opinion. You're entitled to it. I quite enjoyed it for what it was. I wanted to look at Frankenhooker because there's other kind of female feminist Frankenstein-led films at the moment, or Frankensteinian, you know, like Lisa Frankenstein is coming out as well, or has just come out, I'm not sure. But that is why I chose this. So, Andy, you have the floor. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Frankenhooker?
My God. you certainly bring them to the table, don't you? That is the best thing I can say about this film.
I brought it to the table.
So, I mean, quite simply, a failed doctor or medical student loses his fiance in a bizarre, crazy accident during a birthday party, no less, and he chooses to bring her back to life. But in order to do so, he uses the body parts of numerous ladies of the night, traversing the red light district of his hometown, and uses a local hotel room to obtain these parts. It all goes horrifically wrong, and yet he still goes ahead and recreates his fiance, and I mean, by doing so, she becomes a horrific Frankensteinian monster of hooker proportions, and she goes on a crazy rampage through the town until it all comes to a bizarre and crazy end. And there we go. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Good night. Yes, that's pretty well summed up, I think. It is a very, very interesting film. Very different, short and sweet.
It is very short.
It's very short. So you've got to give it that. It's, you know, it's not going on. It's not belaboring.
Yeah, you've got to give it that.
Yeah, it's not a one-note joke, though. I think there's a lot of layers to unpack, and there's been a lot of articles written about the film and how kind of a little bit ahead of its time it was. It's exploring a lot of feminist ideas, like the male gaze, the patriarchy. You know, it talks about legalizing prostitution within the film itself. There's an advocate for that. You know, it is exploring kind of avenues and things, only briefly. It never kind of forgets what it is, but it still has those elements. All the men in it are particularly not really drawn very well. They're all quite bad people on some level. Every man in it is weird or, you know, sexually perverse.
Even that TV show host.
Yeah, exactly. You've got that. Oh, the world is doomed. The end is nigh. You know, he's got a big sandwich board on, and even he's not a great guy. You've got the pimp. You've got all these people in the bar. They're all kind of horrific people, and you know, the not to spoil the ending of Frankenhooker, but which is available on YouTube if you want to watch it in full, all of its glory. It is, you know, the men don't get what they want. You know, the main character doesn't get what he wants. You know, he's, you know, ends up, spoilers for the film already, but he gets his kind of just desserts for the ideas that he's. Now, the idea, it happens, Jeffrey Franken is called, the Jersey Boy, Dr. Jersey Boy, he is an electrician who is a failed med student, and he has a beautiful girlfriend who apparently is putting on a lot of weight, and loads of people are commenting on her weight and how fat she's getting. She's not fat at all, and that's another thing, I think.
It's such a bizarre opening. Like, they're all just commenting. And again, it's a thread that literally has no meaning and goes nowhere.
Hmm. Well, I think it does because
is it?
Yeah, right. because Jeffrey, right, so she's the world views her as a little bit larger. And there are people that, you know, view women and they go, oh, she's tubby and fat. And I'm like, she's not. She's nowhere near, however, you're viewing
she's thinner
her
than
that lens.
Hookers that he finds.
Yeah, exactly, and she is like when we she's in a fat suit as well at the start of the film because that's the idea, and like her friends are telling her she's fat, her parents are telling her she's fat, but she's not fat, she's really not, she's just an average ample sized woman. But I think that does play into it because I love it because Jeffrey's in his kitchen or in his girlfriend's kitchen. And he's got a brain with an eyeball in it, and he's trying to bring it to life, and he's trying to figure out what electrodes to put in the brain, and he's just like there, and everyone's like, it's very like, it's almost like David Lynchian a little bit, like there's all this like, you know, the kind of Norman Rockwell kind of idea of nice kind of picket fences and stuff, but all the while he's this mad scientist that everyone's like treating very nicely, and he's like, yeah, nothing wrong with that, you're great, you're cool, you're a nice guy. And and everyone's like, can you pass me the ketchup? And he's got like the ketchup near the big kind of jar of this brain and this eyeball in it. And they're like, oh, what's that? Oh, that's very interesting. And they're like, he's a bit kooky, not like a mad scientist. They're treating him like he's just like a bit of a loon, you know. And she loves him, she cares for him, and, you know, she's very passionate and supportive, and he's trying to come up with all these kind of weird and wacky ideas. I think it plays into it because she has a remote control lawnmower that Jeffrey's invented, and he's like, it's on UHF! And she stands directly in front of it and causes this horrible accident. And she's cut into
Don't turn it when you're in front of it.
And you don't see it, but it's implied that she's just gone to pieces. And there's body parts missing, and he's trying to deal with it. And like that first like 10-20 minutes is him really like dealing with the grief and going into these kind of deep, dark, depressive, this deep, dark, depressive and obsessive state. And his mum's coming in and she's looking at the brain in the fish tank.
No, nobody raises questions like where this brain has come from or anything or what he's doing. It's bizarre. It's almost like something out of fucking Beetlejuice or just how bizarre. Yeah.
It is a little.
Nobody questions it. Everybody just goes, "Ah, well, you know, just don't stay up too late."
It does seem a little. There is a little bit like that Tim Burton energy to it. I think there's a little bit of that feel, a little bit like that weird. But we're in a weird world anyway, so it's fine. But I think it does. Her being overweight or perceived to be overweight, even though she's not. Is I think that falls into what he's doing because he could recreate her perfectly. He could go, right, I need to find somebody with the same body type, the same, you know, if he wanted to, he could potentially find someone that looked almost identical, had the same type of body. But he doesn't stop there. He goes, I can make her better. I can rebuild her. I can make her, I can remove this mole. Like when he's doing the kind of diagram and working it all out, he's going, okay, there's some imperfections. Why don't I, you know, perfect them? So I think that does play into what he's talking about, what he's doing, what he's planning, because again, he loved her dearly. So why not recreate it as she was, you know, imperfect, you know, perceived as overweight. Why not create that? Because no, because I like big tits. I want a woman with big tits and a big ass. So I'm gonna, you know, why not? And that's where the kind of that the fantasized woman, the male kind of idea of what we want, like men should get what they want. Apparently, I think they're playing with that kind of angle, and again, that comes up in the finale as well. But he does decide again. He tries to work out, and then he wants to find one woman, so he goes around and he goes into New York and goes to find prostitutes because he's trying to find one in particular, one perfect one, but he can't find it because his standards are too high. He's like, oh, you've got a nice ass, yeah, but she's got wonderful legs. Well, look at those tits, you know, all this sort of stuff. So eventually he can't decide. But Andy, and again, like, he's not a good guy. Like, he's not a nice guy, and you're not supposed to feel for him too much.
An annoying fuck. He really annoyed me.
Go on. Why?
I don't know. I've seen this actor before. I think he's done quite a lot of, bit parts here and there. Mm. But just in this, I don't know what it was, but bugger me, he was grating my cheddar something fierce. I was, his voice was doing my head in, really doing my head in. Because he narrates everything himself, doesn't he? He's narrating everything. He's narrating his thoughts, his feelings. It's sort of like a weird backwards manner of exposition, like the way he's going about everything he's doing. He's fully explaining all his own intricate thoughts and requirements, needs, and then doubts. And he drills his own head when he's unsure of something. It's like, what? Again, it's like it's another facet of this film that just isn't explained, which is fine. Mm. It's fine. But there's those little kooky moments in it when you're like, oh, go further with that, when he's drilling his head. Like, go further with that. I want to see what you're doing with that, what this means. And we don't go anywhere with it. And then he's just mumbling fucking shit. And like, oh, what are you doing? Just get on with it. The entire build-up to it is the construction of this monster is something else. It's something else. It takes its time with it. I'm not going to say for the benefit of the film. I do think it could have got on with it a little bit, but up until the point where everything just goes wrong, when he's picking and choosing all these different women. And he's analyzing everything critically, and you know, well, this can go with that, that can go with this. He's like piecing together like weird Lego blocks in a way, to create this perfect ideal of a perfect woman. All the while, he's just completely lost sight of the fact that he's trying to, you know, bring his dead fiance back, whose head's just there in a weird. Freezer chest, a chest freezer full of purple liquid. Again, that's never fully explained properly.
No, some sort of preserving agent or something. But he does say his like serum is estrogen based, so he can only bring back women. Which I guess
estrogen based serum, tremendous.
Like, okay, sure. Like again, I that only really comes into play later on, like in the finale. But you know, it's just a weird thing that he has to mention. That only comes up at the end, but and I love that he's like I ordered this dinner. He's got pizza. Yeah. He's like force feeding a pizza.
You like Italian? It's just microwave pizza. Okay, pouring wine down the throat.
Yeah, he's like the proper, like, again, it's the whole idea that, you know, Frankenstein is the monster, like Dr. Frankenstein is the monster. Not the creation of Adam or whatever you want to call him.
We do get some reward in that kind of vein, don't we, at the end of the film. It sort of plays up to that, doesn't it? But yeah, I just It's, of course, you know, it's by on its heart, it's a B movie, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't hide away from it, it doesn't shy away from it. It's kooky, it's nonsense. And you know, the performance kind of works in that regard, really. But for me, it just started to annoy me. But then once we get into like the absolute chaos of the film, I think that's when it, because it was losing me a little bit. But then when it gets into the chaos, when he finally picks and chooses all these ladies, yeah. for his scheme, and the what is it, the crack cocaine or whatever,
super crack. Yeah.
Good God, man. You know, that's another thing. Like, they don't explain it. I don't expect them to explain everything in this film, but the things just happen, and they happen with such bombasticness. It's hilarious. And at that point, when he has all these ladies together and he has a change of heart, he's like, no, I can't go through this. Don't want to go through this anymore. And then they're trying to force him. Like, where's the money? He gives them this big bag of money. How he's got that money, again, we don't know. It's a lot of money. And he creates this super crack himself. Crazy, crazy idea to basically kill off these ladies without... I don't know what he's expecting. Just kill them off easily or what? It blows up a hamster or something, doesn't it? What was it? Guinea pig?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
A guinea pig, and he thinks it's going to be a different outcome? What?
So yeah, like Frank Henenlotter, the reason he introduces the idea of the super crack is that he was afraid that if you see Jeffrey with like a saw or like a weapon, or you know, he's dismembering body parts or he's killing these women, it goes more into a darker territory where it's like it's a bit more kind of, maybe it's too misogynistic, or
it would end up blowing the R rating, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
They were quite happy for people to explode, so long as there was only six of them. But I think if you start chopping limbs off and hacking,
yeah, exactly.
Because it's very goreless, isn't it? This film,
yeah,
gore. You mean you see severed limbs, but they're very on the nose. They're quite obviously.
Oh, it's cartoony. It's cartoony,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's the way I was going to describe it. It is very cartoony, yeah. And that's where the thoughts of like Beetlejuice come into mind, because that level of comedy gore, where it's like, you know, quite clearly fake body parts and things sewn together. It is cartoony. It's very cartoony.
Oh, definitely, 100%. And I you are correct. It's very bloodless, because a lot of the kills are not based on like violence or beating, or you know, it's electricity or explosions, or you know, being like knocked out by a severed head. You know, it's not. It's not a real world. The logic is not real world logic. It's cartoon logic. It's, you know, it's like those, you know, adult cartoons you would get in like the 30s or 40s that were meant for like titillation. That's what this is. And it's kind of tapping into that. And the, you know, those dirty old kind of porno mags where it would be a cartoon, you know, woman doing, you know, sexual things, or, you know, what have you. And I think that's the kind of where they're going. It's arguably more of a sexploitation flick than it is a horror movie, I'd say.
Yeah, there's nothing really horrifying in the film, is there?
No, there's some.
I don't even think it plays towards any horror element.
No, again, I think it kind of says like, look at society, look how bad it is, look at all these women who are forced to become sex workers or prostitutes, whatever the correct term is, the politically correct term is. You know, they're all hooked on drugs. Men are controlling them. Men have, you know. Look at Zorro, who is the pimp character in this absolutely buff, you know, guy can't act to save his life, but I kind of embraced it, because I was like, nah, it's fine. He's absolutely hench.
Can't even bang on a door convincingly. When he's banging on the door to try and get into this room where Jersey Boy is with all these sex workers, he can't even bang on the door. He marches straight up and goes, hey, yo.
Yeah, he's something else. He's got this big like Z on there. He brands the women as well, which I think is quite a dark element as well. Like, and then there's the guy in the bar who goes down on the Frankenhooker as well. Like, and you know, he's sleazy piece of shit as well, and he gets his just desserts as well. But yeah, I think it kind of goes like, oh, by the way, you know, this happens in real life. You know, this thing, this is real and this is in our world, but we're just going to play it cartoony. But even though it plays it cartoony, it's not belittling people who deal with that sort of shit in real life. Women who are abused and, you know, put into sex work or whatever you want to call it, you know, or trafficked or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't belittle them or their strife or their problems or their issues. If anything, Frankenhooker is kind of what the women want to get out of their life. They want to kill their pimp and, you know, escape these horrible men and their view of women, their sexualized view of women, and, you know, keeping them in their place. So, you know, there's a lot of, I know what it is, and I know it's meant to titillate and to be silly, but I think there is an undercurrent of something that's quite real. And I think that's why a lot of, you know, I'll post links to a few articles written by women about this film and what they feel about it, because they can explain it better than I ever could. But I can see what they mean. I can see what they're saying. It's almost an exploitation film for women in a sense, because, you know, that yes, there are breasts, yes, there is nudity, and again, there is that, but again, I don't know, I think it might be even unintentionally. I don't know if it was something that they were intentionally trying to do or to explore, but there's definitely an undercurrent of something that's very real and something that's very telling about how women are viewed in our world and not this cartoony bizarre one that we're watching. But you are right, it is silly, it is stupid, it is, you know, it entertains me because I think it's just, again, it embraces what it is. It just goes, we're just a bizarre B movie, check it out. Like the idea itself, like the guy, Frank Cannonlotter, went in and he was pitching several movies. I think one was called like something like Insect City or something. The guy was like, I don't like that idea. And he's like, what about this idea? And he's like, no, don't like that. And all these ideas. And he was like, have you got anything else? And he was literally like, yeah, I've got something else. A mad scientist, girlfriend dies. And he puts together all these parts from prostitutes and creates a Frankenwoman. The guy's laughing, the producer, what have you. And eventually he's like, yeah, sold. Make that now. What else have you got? And he's like, we can do Basket Case 2. And he's like, great, sold. We'll do them back to back. We'll film them back to back. By the way, what's it going to be called? And he was like, Frankenhooker. Brilliant. Great, let's go. And like, that's how it ended up being made, literally off the cuff idea. And I do think this is, I've seen a few of his films. I've seen Basket Case. I've seen Brain Damage. You know, so I think this is still his best, because I think there's a lot he's exploring there. Even briefly, I think there's a lot more. Like Brain Damage is about kind of drug abuse and being on drugs and drug addiction. But the drug happens to be a weird little alien that just goes on the back of your neck and kind of talks to you. It's kind of like if Venom was funnier than it was. Brain Damage is, basically.
Not fake funny, but actually funny.
kind of funny. And there's a lot here that I enjoy. Let's talk about the piece de resistance, which is the super crack scene. So why don't you tell us about this, Andy, since I believe it's your favorite part of the film.
Like a lot with this film, I don't know what I was expecting from this particular scene, but I was curious because I didn't know what his overall plan was going to be, or like how he was going to manage the carnage that was going to, you know, happen. But then obviously he does change his mind. He's like, no, I don't want to go through this. And they're kind of forcing him, and he's trying to stop them. So there's this mad melee of all these sex workers just fucking doing this drug. And he's like, no, please stop, please. And they're just completely ignoring him. And then all of a sudden, they just each individually just explode, and my God, again, there's some rhyme, some rhymey elements in it, isn't there?
Oh yeah, definitely.
With the way they explode. I mean, there's a shot where somebody's leg gets blown off, and like it's the tracking, like the camera's like attached to the leg, and it goes towards.
Oh, that's brilliant! I love that shot. Yeah, it's just this like silhouetted leg just flies off fully. Full leg flies off towards the camera.
Yeah, I just got memories of Evil Dead where the eyeball just goes straight into somebody's mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just it's absolute, it's mayhem. It's very schlockily done. The cuts are actually pretty good, actually. So we cut from like, you know, the actresses being there to quite obviously dummies, but they're like inch perfectly done, which I found quite clever. I was like, oh shit, they changed there, and then immediately they blow up. And then the pyrotechnics are god awful, but you know, you're just watching dummies explode in the most bizarre ways. it made me chuckle. Like there was nobody else in the house. I was watching this earlier on, and I was just
probably for the best
laughing. Yeah, I was just giggling away at just the absolute mayhem. And I rewound it, I put it back and watched it again because I was that shocked that it happened like it did. And it happened like so almost out of nowhere as well. Because I thought like, oh, it's not going to work. Something's not going to happen. It's going to change. Something's going to be different. And then the others went, and you start blowing up everywhere. And then you get Zorro banging on the door. And as soon as he comes through, one of the hookers just explodes and the head just flies straight at him and smacks him straight into the face. And, oh, it's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And then, like nobody else reacts to these explosions, and he's got time to start bagging up different bits and pieces and get
that. It's got a bin bag. It's got a bin bag.
Yeah, it's just a big bin bag.
The thing that made me really chuckle as well, like he's got to get all the what do they call it? The raw materials, I think they call it in like Frankensteinian things. The raw materials. He puts all the raw materials. He goes out the fire escape, but then he throws them off the fire escape, which I was like, you really possibly ruined those raw materials that you've been like, oh yeah, I've got to make sure it's perfect. And then all of a sudden, I found that hilarious. He was just like, fuck it.
He has the leg, doesn't he? The stiletto leg. He's like, oh, I'll have this one. And then he just goes, and lobs it over the side. Like,
and then later he finds like he gets out like he's looking through them. He's like, oh, too charred, too burnt. He's like, oh no, this is perfect. He's like, he's picking out and he's trying to match the breasts and everything. And he's like, no. And then he gets a leg out. He's like, oh no, bunions. he gets sandpaper or something, a file or something. Starts filing it off. What's interesting as well, like, you know, he's enjoying the party. He's like, you know, he's the doctor and he's doing all this and investigating, getting under them and doing all this, you know, playing doctor. And you know, he's giving them a lot of money. Zorro's got the money and he initially
tried to sell them that it was for his brother. And then when his brother's not there, nobody questions it.
Yeah.
Like, where's your brother? Oh, that's for me.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's when they want to, like, you've measured everybody, you've tested everybody, you know.
Yeah.
Who do you want? He's like, I can't pick. I can't decide on one woman. You're all, you know, perfect in different ways.
Fucking pay us.
Yeah, pay us because we got to get it back out. And I love the attitude of the hookers. Again, lack of a better word. They're very boisterous. They're very to the point. They don't mess about. Like, you're fucking wasting my time. I need to make money. Give me my money. You know, like, want a date? You know, all the lines, like, got any money? You know? You know, all that stuff. You know, where are we going? Want a party? You know, all that sort of stuff. And that's what I love about it is when Patty Mullen becomes the Frankenhooker. Like, she's
railing off all these lines.
Railing off all the lines. She's and like, it just randomly as well. She's like, it's like they're involuntary. They're like coming out for her. I think Patty Mullen was, she wasn't an actress. She was a hustler. She was in Hustler magazine. She would, you know, pose nude and stuff.
Oh, right.
And most of the actors who were playing the prostitutes were also, they were either in porn, they did Hustler, or they were just actors that were willing to, you know, take their clothes off effectively. And there was a lot of tension apparently from all the different, you know, apparently like the actor playing Jeffrey Franken would go over and he'd be talking to the porn actors and they're like, look at those sluts over there. And then he'd go to the next side of the room and it'd be like the pinup models or Hustler and they'd be like, look at those fucking sluts over there. And he just agreed with whoever he was with at the time. Like, he's like, yeah, definitely.
In the, in the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And, gone.
And apparently, like, this production was hell as well. Like, it was, you know, they had problems there. He had problems with several cinematographers. Or I think this one cinematographer had to leave. He fired one director of photography. And Hennenlotte had a nightmare. This was an absolute nightmare for him to shoot, and he hated it. But I actually think it came out to be arguably his best film.
Strange that, because you don't get a sense that there was anything going on behind the scenes like negatively, because in its own weird sort of way. As much as I'll be straight up with you, as much as I didn't really care for this film,
sure,
you know, it's actually pretty well done to be fair to the film. Yeah. Like it moves along. All by, you know, the third floor is a bit up and down.
I do agree. I think it lingers a little too much on the woe is me.
Yeah, because if anything, I wanted to see more of the final third. I wanted to see more of it. And I was a little bit disappointed that it ends so quickly, just as we ramp up, just as things start getting crazy. To be fair, you know, like I said, you know, I didn't get a sense that anything was, you know, particularly off, you know, behind the scenes. You can genuinely tell. I mean, without, you know, we get a lot these days of, you know, shit going on behind the scenes, don't we? You know, nothing's hidden anymore. But even old films, when you watch them and you go, well, that doesn't quite look right. And then you read up on them afterwards and you go, well, fucking hell, no surprise, because everyone fucking hated each other. You don't really get a sense of that here, with it. And I think that's probably the quality of the, you know, the type of film it is, you know, the B-movie aspect of the film, because quite clearly the central people, when they're on screen, obviously enjoying themselves.
Yeah, they're having great fun. And I think you're right. I think it's not like an End of Days where you're like, yeah, something went terribly wrong here and there was something going on very badly behind the camera.
You can smell it coming off the screen. Like,
smells
like shit.
Yeah. Smells like shit. Smells like Bigfoot's dick. I agree. God. But going back to Patty Mullen, I think her performance in this is superb. I think she's... Again, she's not an actor, but she absolutely gave it her all. She embraces it. She's got the walk down, the kind of like awkward walking, and she's got the whole like the lips, the thing she does with her lips. So it's like, you know, every so often. I love, and again, like her mimicry of the other actors in the film, like, again, the kind of head, you know, prostitute in the film, like, She is like mimicking her lines like perfectly, like the syntax, the timing, the pace, the rhythm, you name it. I was like, Jesus, it's like literally she's, you know, just become that person, and all of a sudden, but again, her, you know, she's saying the lines, but you know, her body's doing all sorts of stuff, and it's like involuntary action. And again, like she's made up of so many different body parts. I love that one of her body parts is a black woman's arm. But it's just there. I was like, obviously it doesn't fit, and it's kind of like bizarre. And I love that she, again, you think when he's going to create her, and he does the whole lightning thing, which again isn't in the novel, but it's only in films, the whole you know, striking lightning and everything. And you think he's going to be like, you know, she comes out, but then she's, you know, being possessed by the souls effectively of all these dead prostitutes. Like, yeah, want a date? And then she goes out, and then
what?
and she doesn't, you know, again, she doesn't give a shit. She's like, she knows what she wants. She's knows what she's after. She's like, got any money? You know, And the second he says, he's like, what are you on about? And she knocks him out completely cold. And like, there's a nice guy walking down the street, and she's like, want a date? And she's like, oh, yes, I'd love to, but I'm quite busy right now, and I just need to... He's like, knocks him out.
And the other one as well, it made me fucking chuckle when she's walking down the street. She knocks somebody into the road, and you hear a car go, boop, boop. It's the guy, and you don't see it. You just hear it off screen. It's brilliant. Like that, like those little moments. I liked those little moments. Those little moments of really dark comedy. That's when it was starting to elevate for me. Just why I wanted more of that final third of the film, because there's those little moments like, you want to have some fun? No, I don't want to have some fun. Yeah. Like, I want to see more. I want to see more of these people, like these random people, just being unnecessarily killed by this creature that's got no control whatsoever. Because that's where the film is actually really entertaining.
Mm.
At these moments, because she doesn't know she's killing them.
Nah.
Either. Like, and then obviously when she gets into the club, she finds that weird sort of Danny DeVito looking man, doesn't she?
Mm, yeah.
And he's like, oh yes, I'll come with you, it's great. And then he's the only one that dies happy.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then you've got
that's what he wants.
Yeah, absolutely. Somehow she inexplicably has electrical powers as well, and while she, yeah, and blue and purple nipples as well.
Yeah.
She gets a top. I love that she's in this bizarre outfit as well, like the circular, you know, very odd like choice of outfit for her. And again, not like, and that's the point here, is he's trying to make the perfect woman.
Yeah.
But it's not her. It's not her. And like, he's dressing her like somebody else. He wants her to act like somebody else, but he still misses her. And it's very interesting. Again, a lot of layers there, I think.
Mm.
And I like as well when he's in there and he's having fun with the prostitutes, he's like, oh, this is all right. This, you know, just measuring and looking at all the body parts and groping them and feeling them up and everything. And he's having a whale of a time. And then he decides he can't go through with it. So he doesn't actually kill him himself.
Yeah.
But he has the super crack, and they find it and they get so excited. They're like, yeah, party time.
It's like people finding the lucky charms, isn't it? Oh, look at these.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks, Jersey boy. And he's like, oh. And then he's like, no, you're going to die. You're going to blow up. You're going to get too hot. Look at her. She's steaming. Like, you know, she's going to blow. You get out of the way. And he starts, they start playing some rap music, and he starts getting very like white conservative, like almost religious. Like he's had his all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, I'm not having fun anymore, so I have to judge you. And he starts being like, oh, well, that's the rap music is the devil's music. And like, yeah, it's some like white conservative Christian type guy. And he's like, no. And they start having like a lesbian kiss, and he's like, oh, no, that's disgusting. How dare you? That's filth. That's dreadful.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is interesting as well. This has, you know, there's some deeper like context there as well, that he's, you know, he's being very judgmental now. He's like, no, you're filthy, you're dirty, it's disgusting, it's obscene what you're doing, you know. Even though when he was enjoying it, when it was on, you know, when the focus was on him and his pleasure, it was fine. But the second the women are enjoying themselves, oh, fucking hell, they can't have that. So again, that was quite interesting as well to see that. But yeah, and we have the creation of her. We have her going around, but then Zorro finds out he was knocked out by one of the severed heads of the exploding women that came out again. Very Evil Dead, you know, coming at them, and my dad, it's so brilliant. He finds the Frankenhooker, and she gets punched in the face, and her head comes off, and all the electricity comes pouring out of her. Jeffrey finds her, fixes her up, takes her back, and then kind of clamps her head down, because it was like very thinly kind of stitched on before. Now he's like got these big bolts in almost to keep her head straight. And then he manages to bring his girlfriend's, you know, sanity back, or her personality back. And she's amazed by it. She's in love with him. She's like, oh, you're amazing. And she's like, what happened? Am I okay? And he's like, well, things happened.
What happened to the party? You remember the lawnmower.
Yeah, and you know, she's like, oh, you brought me back from the dead. What an amazing accomplishment, a scientific marvel. I love you. You're going to be so successful. And then she looks at her own body, and that's when the shit kind of hits the fan at that point.
Yeah.
Because he's taken away her autonomy, everything about her. She was like, this is my chest, my arm, you know, my breast, my ass. This isn't anything. This is not me. And he's like, well, it's an improvement, you know. And then Zorro comes in and starts attacking. But all the while, this is probably one of your favorite bits, I think, is when all the leftover parts have been, you know, sat in this kind of cooler, and they get affected by the electricity as well the second time around.
You get a subtle hint to it, don't you?
Yeah, and they kind of start almost, you know, writhing and jiggling and all sorts. And then Azorro kind of tries to attack and tries to kill, you know, because he was like, these are my bitches. These are my bitches. Like, all the way through, he's like, these are my bitches. Like, taking ownership of
them. Come on, you're going to work for me.
He killed all my bitches. I can't believe he killed all my bitches. You know, all this. And then he gets knocked into this kind of cooler, and all the pieces that were remaining have kind of congealed together and become these, like, again, very, like, you know, very Cronenbergian, very John Carpenter, like The Thing.
Very much like a weird Evil Dead thing, isn't it?
Yeah. there's like an arm with two, there's like a head with two arms coming out the back of it, and there's a stomach and breasts, and then there's like a mouth, an upside down mouth on it.
Yeah, upside down mouth looks like it's on top of a kneecap or something. It's just like,
absolutely,
what the fuck is this?
Absolutely, kind of bizarre creation.
But I love it how he falls over and he just falls right in front of one, and it like almost tries to kiss him, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, he's like, he's like, oh, no, don't kiss me. This is disgusting and weird. Very kind of, there's a bit of Reanimator in there, I think, as well, a little bit. But I think Reanimator came out. Yeah, was it 1984, 86, I think? And then the sequel, I think, came out in 89. So yeah, there's definitely, I think, a bit of influence there as well. Mm. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. But do you want to talk about how it ends? Because we've kind of foreshadowed that a little bit.
Yeah. So obviously Zorro gets groped and touching people, groping people. And he gets groped by these leftover pieces and dragged into the freezer for the nefarious purposes. Mm. And what was funny is Zorro has like some crack, doesn't he, that he uses to control them. And he's dropped it, and then one of the pieces sort of wriggles out and grabs hold of the crack and brings it back in. And you can just hear him going, inside the chest. And then he's just left there. But then obviously because Jersey Boy has been beheaded by Zorro quite hilariously, and is she obviously, as you know, you can see it coming a mile away.
Mm.
She puts him back together, but not in the way that you're thinking. You think, oh, she puts him back together, she solves the problem, she devised her own way of, you know, recreating the perfect man. Oh, he's perfect, all right. She uses the estrogen serum to attach his head to leftover parts again from other women. And he's just, he's a beautiful young lady.
Yes, he is. Again, she says, you know, it's an estrogen-based serum. I can't use it on Zorro. I can't use his body parts.
Yeah, because that's, I think that's where you're thinking, aren't you? Like, you see his head and he's back alive and you're like, oh, she's attached him to Zorro. He's a big, bulky man, so he becomes the perfect geezer. But no, the first thing you see is two big old breasts. And he's like, oh, what have you done? Where's my Johnson?
That's it. Again, straight away, he goes like, where's my Johnson? That's all that matters. Where's my Johnson? But again, it's, you know, sweet revenge is this guy, you know, gets his comeuppance. All the women get their revenge and all the horrible things that he's done to them and created. You know, he's not the hero of the story. I know you got to sympathize with him like a touch, but then after that, he goes into kind of proper mad scientist territory really, really quick, like really quick. And even then, he's not great when he's at the beginning of it. Like, he's not a great guy. No.
Not likable at all. He's obviously can't do anything in his life. He's propped up by other family members, isn't he?
Mm.
But yeah, I think it's quite funny that she sees him almost in the end, she sees him almost as being perfect now that she's constructed him in a weird kind of way. Sort of takes a step back and views his visage in all his glory and goes, "Ah, this is great. I like this. You look perfectly fine.
True creation, something completely new." But that is Frankenhooker, basically. Did you notice a lot of thematic elements, similarities to Poor Things?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, You know, you got the surface bloody, you know, things that sort of mix and match, don't you?
Yeah. The Frankensteinian stuff. Like, yeah. I think the main concept is it's a woman, a guy makes her, puts her together out of several parts, yeah. and she also becomes a prostitute at one point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the difference is, you know, the journeys are very different. Like
oh, absolutely,
say,
yeah.
There's different thoughts and feelings going around about, you know, about poor things. You know, I've got my own thoughts and opinions on it. And I'm hesitant to say it's been a divisive film, but it's certainly been a film that people talk about.
Yeah.
You know, and beyond that, I mean, you've got comedy elements in Poor Things. You've got a different kind of comedy element here. This is much more the body horror kind of it, isn't it? The body horror, you know, idea of comedy, whereas Poor Things, I think, is much more, you know, a character-driven, you know,
comedy. I mean, it's not like, I wouldn't do like a Clone Wars of these films. Like, I wouldn't.
They're not even close in that respect, are you?
I mean, I wouldn't compare
them. You'd be closer doing bloody Clone Wars to, you know, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with Robert De Niro and Frank, as opposed to Poor Things and Frankenhooker. You know, I'm just generalizing there. That's not the case at all. But I
get what you mean. But yeah, I wouldn't go, oh, let's do a Clone Wars of this. Because again, we know what would win. We know, again, Poor Things has got money, acting talent, you know, cinematography, you name it, it's going to be loads better anyway, like no matter what you, but it's again, the too dissimilar for you to compare while still having similar thematic concepts that are talking about, you know, a woman's bodily autonomy and morality and the world, the male view of the world, the patriarchal view of the world, the male gaze. There's a lot of stuff that arguably is being explored in Frankenhooker, but not in Poor Things, or vice versa. I wouldn't directly compare them. I just thought it seems to be like a lot of films are coming out that Angry Black Girl and Her Monster is one, and I think there's one called Afterlife, which is about kind of a resurrected baby and that kind of idea. So the ideas seem to be, it seems to be something in the zeitgeist. There seems to be a lot of these kind of feminist Frankensteinian takes.
It's challenging traditional sort of feminist movies, isn't it? From my perspective, I'm not in a position where I can argue that, you know, feminism or not. I can't argue. I'm not in that position. But from my perspective, as somebody that views films critically and looks at them at all different angles, you know, Poor Things is a challenging film, and it was challenging for my missus, but she really enjoyed it, and she sees herself as, you know, somewhat of a feminist, not a major feminist, but she has feminist ideals. I mean, you've talked to yourself.
Sure.
I'm sure you've explored those kind of things with some of the Disney films that you've talked about.
Sure.
But again, she found it challenging, but then she found it, you know, quite invigorating as well, in a way, because, you know, Emma Stone's character is, you know, so unaware of the world, and yet at the same time just fucking goes for it. And then she does have those moments where she questions everything. She does have those moments where she challenges everything, like the moments when she challenges Mark Ruffalo in the film. You know, I think there's obviously going to be, you know, a lot of thoughts and opinions on it, you know, consent, all this kind of stuff, with good reason. But I think depending on your own background, your own outlook, you will have different reactions to it. And I think it's designed purely for that reason. I think it's designed to elicit responses from all different kinds of people. You know, I'm not blowing smoke up my own ass, but my review has had a fucking immense reaction to it, and I think that's because of it. Because a lot of people have so many different opinions on the film. So many people have a different, you know, thought about the film. You know, what does that mean? How does this mean? I don't like that moment. I love that moment. You know, that moment upsets me, angers me. This moment, I love it. I think it's liberating. We're all having different reactions to the same moments in the film. And, you know, it comes across in the discourse. So, you know, it's a one in a generation film, I think, in terms of that. And you know, when you look at it in terms of like a film like Frankenhooker, you know, the basis has to come from somewhere, doesn't it? And the basis of it, of, you know, all things, has to come from somewhere, and it's obviously come from Frankenstein. Possibly there may have been some sort of, you know, elements taken from this film. Who knows?
Yeah,
maybe. We don't know, do we?
I know it's based on a book, Poor Things, as well. So there's probably something there.
Yeah,
as well.
No, it is. Yeah. So the majority of the focus will have come from that, won't it? But still, you still have those elements, those weird, kooky elements in Poor Things, you know, the creatures and the mismatched animals. And you get those sort of, they're like body horror moments. You know, that you see in Cronenberg, you know, the half creature, half human hybrids and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, inspiration comes in many forms and it comes from many places. You know, it has done for me. I'm sure it has done for you. And, you know,
I think
from other places.
Good films get people talking, I think. And the discourse is important. You know, however, like you said, however you feel, whatever your opinion on it is. Again, I'll disagree with some, I'll agree with others. And
bloody hell, we disagree all the fucking time.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And that's fine. That's interesting. You know, I like this. Andy doesn't particularly like this, but he still found moments in it that he enjoyed. You know, there's still, and again, that's the fun. You know, I loved Gladiator. You know,
I'm pretty sure there'll be something further on down the line that I make you watch and you go, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
And I can't wait.
Well, one last thing before we finish. This was Bill Murray's favourite film of 1990. Just so
I remember you saying as much, and yeah, that doesn't surprise me, to be fair. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So he's so aloof, isn't he, Bill Murray? You wonder what else he's got hiding under that.
He's his own controversial character as well, I'm sure. Divisive as well. But that was my last kind of fact and figure about it. But yeah, I think it's something. Embrace it, enjoy it. Again, I'd love to hear what people think about the film. You know, if it offends you, fair enough. That's fine.
I can't see how this film would offend you.
I don't think so, personally.
It plays it all on the nose, doesn't it? It's all very on the nose. And yeah, there are the sex workers. They are, you know, they do just dress themselves and whatever. But, you know, those people hired for a very specific reason, and that was their job, you know, outside of the film, then. You know, it's one of those, isn't it? It's just another avenue for discussion. But
yeah, absolutely.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say that there were parts that I really did enjoy this film, and yet there were parts where I was like, oh, bloody hell, Dan, what are you doing to me? And I would challenge anybody to not at least get something from the film in some way, whether it's just one of the off-the-cuff remarks, one of the weird lines that get uttered that no human being would ever say, like just the way he talks, like it's the whole internal monologue that's external. I was just like, nobody talks like this. Nobody, even when I'm alone in the house and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, nobody talks like this to themselves. But yeah.
Mumbly fuck, as I'll quote you, mumbly fuck.
Stuttering, mumbling fuck you.
Right. Well, I hope you've enjoyed Frankenhooker. Tell me what you think about it. Tell us what you think about it. Do you agree with Andy? Do you agree with me? Is there more to it than the surface level, that it's just a sexploitation horror flick? Or is there something more to it? But yes, that has been Frankenhooker. Again, available on YouTube. I will link it in the show notes and you can watch it yourself. But Andy, before we go, again, this is all about sharing films. So what, pray tell, are you bringing to the table? You'll certainly bring something to the table like I have, but what is it that we're getting from you next?
Now, there were several options on the table. There were several options that I've been mulling over since obviously you announced we were doing Frankenhooker, and I was like, okay, I was having a look and I was thinking, do I go the complete opposite? Do I edge along the trajectory you're going? And obviously, I've got your list. I have it right here in front of me right now, your letterbox list of 12 pages, I think it currently sits at.
I have a lot of time on my hands. And
yeah. Films that you haven't seen. There's still a couple on there that you have seen because of me. You do need to go through them.
I'll need to edit.
Loads.
I do it every so often. I think I do it every month or so, just to double check.
There's loads on here. There's like a vast, this is why I like your list, because there's a vast, you know, a myriad of different films in here. There's a few that are like, oh, bloody hell, I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, some of them are like proper Oscar bait, some of them are Oscar winning, some of them are box office gold.
Some of them are shit.
Some of them are garbage, yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Some of them are awful, but people have told me I should watch them. A lot of people have said you need to watch them. There's popular things for maybe women, and there's popular things that people have told me to watch. It's mostly a proper random list, I'll be honest, but I've just gone...
It is.
What is it, the stuff I've always wanted to watch? What is the stuff that people have always told me to watch? What has the world told me to watch? It's a huge myriad, like you said, of everything. So, and I didn't want it to just be like, oh, I'll just go through all the Oscar wins or all the biggest box office winners or all the critically best, you know, highest tomato, Rotten Tomato ratings or something like that. I wanted a huge range. And that's certainly what I have on there. But what is it, Andy? What is it?
Yeah, so like I was saying, like I really want to set the tone for how difficult a decision it was. There was one film that you had up on your list of things for one of your months that you were planning, and I was like, I was pushing people to fucking pick it, and they didn't pick it because they're assholes and they picked the obvious choice. No offense, but pick better choices. And I was like, I should have picked that. Is it too obvious? It's too obvious. And then there was another film that popped up, and then I saw on your list, one of my favorite films, a Lynchian film. Like, God damn it, Dan. God damn it. What are we doing here? Mm. Which one do I pick? And then I saw this one. And it's the film that fucking started it all. It is the film that if we hadn't had this film, we wouldn't have had some of the greatest films ever made. Or at least we wouldn't have had the trajectory that we've got. I have picked Duel by Steven Spielberg.
Ah, yes. Yes. Very nice. Very nice.
It follows along the trajectory of sort of like B-movie kind of horror. If you like, it was a TV movie, kind of came out of nowhere, very, very minimal budget. But without this film, we don't get the magic that comes later on.
Oh.
And excellent. I love it. I haven't seen it for a very long time, but when I watched it, I was absolutely in awe right the way through, because it's so simple, such a simple film. So yeah, there we go.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that. It can't be worse than 1941, I will say.
Oh, God, no. Absolutely.
Fucking hell.
No.
That may turn up in the 200th episode where I'm listing the worst films I've ever covered. Potentially.
It needs to.
It may well.
So bad they fucking buried it.
Yeah. What else can turn up? Who knows? Could there be Ewoks in there? Could there be Wes Craven? Could there be anything? I'm interested to find out. That'll be a fun episode that I'm actually recording tomorrow. So that'll be interesting. And then I'm recording another X-Men podcast, and then the world's my oyster. I'll be going away in April, so we might have to set our duel for maybe May, possibly, I think.
But give you plenty of time to embrace the madness.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I may even drop. I've got a lot on my plate podcast wise at the moment, so I'm gonna maybe kind of ease off a little bit and do some other stuff just to or to take the time to kind of, you know, whatever. I'll manage it myself. I won't tell you how I'm going to manage it, but I'll manage it. I love it. I've made a rod for my own back, Andy. I just said yes to too many people. I don't want to let them down. And now I'm like, oh my God, I need some time alone in a dark room.
I've got too much to do.
Why? I've got a full-time job and I'm doing all of this as well.
I'm in the same boat. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. There's too much to watch. No time to do it.
Exactly.
To quote the end of Daniel Craig's Bond thing, there's just no time to die either. So,
okay. Right. Well, I'm going to go and find a lady of the night myself.
Good Lord.
Got to ease this tension of all these podcasts I'm doing. No, absolutely not. I've had a great time, Andy. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad that you've embraced the weird, and I'm gonna slowly get less weird as we go along. I've got an idea for the next. They're still gonna be weird. Don't get me wrong. There'll be peaks and troughs of weird. But I think I'm just gonna edge off a little bit of the weird. It's still gonna be obscure and odd and a bit odd, you know, a bit off kilter, I'd say. But not like I've gone with Tokyo Ghoul Police. I've gone with Frankenhooker. But I'm gonna slowly but surely just maybe get to somewhere that's kind of a middle ground somewhere, so to speak.
Yeah.
Still off kilter, obscure and weird and unusual, but not quite as batshit insane as Tokyo Ghoul Police. I don't think I can top the weirdness of Tokyo Ghoul Police.
No.
Even Frankenhooker doesn't top the weirdness of Tokyo Ghoul Police.
It was an experience all on its own.
I think that's an excellent shout, Andy. Wonderful, wonderful choice. Yes, I think I've got mine in my head, but I won't reveal it just yet. I think I'll hold off.
For the next one.
I'll save it. It's kind of weird, but I think you'll dig it. It's an interesting kind of weird. But yes, till next time. But this was Sharing the Silver Screen again, and I can't wait for our next duel. See you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.